these 7 years, what did they eat? After all, 7 years of famine. How did people manage to survive after 7 years of famine? So Amalei, Ochim Arochanan. So he said to him, this is what Rochanan said. You notice that over here we have now a series of statements where the question is raised by Rab Nachman to Rav Yitzchak, and Rav Yitzchak answers him with an answer given to these questions that he asked him, an answer given by Rav Yochanan. Okay? So he says, Hachi Yomar Rav Yochanan. This is what Rav Yochanan said concerning that pasuk. He says, Shono Rishono, the first year of the famine, Ochlu Mashi Babotim. They ate whatever they had stored up in their houses. Shaniya, the second year, Ochlu Mashi Basodos. They ate what was still in the fields. Shlishis, the third year, Bisar Behema Tahora. They ate the flesh of, the kosher animals. Revis, in the fourth year, Bisar Behema Tameo. They ate the flesh of animals, which are not kosher. I mean, the famine was so great that people were starving for food, and so they ate non-kosher animals during that fourth year. Chamishis, in the fifth year, Bisar Shekotzim or Mosim. They ate the flesh of Shekotzim or Mosim. Shekotzim or Mosim are all the creeping things, the reptiles and everything else, lizards, snails, the quasar, anything, right. All those things. And needless to say, you can see sort of like also, that there's a descent from the kosher behema, right, to the unkosher behema, and then even worse than that, was the Shkotzim and Ramosim, right? Shishis, in the sixth year, what did they eat? The answer is Bisar Benehim of Nesehim. They ate the flesh of their sons and their daughters.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is, the cannibalism. I mean, there's mention of it, that things will become so terrible that, because of the famine, it's so severe that people will actually be eating their own children's flesh. We have references to it in the Tochicho. And we have an Eicha also, where it's written over there, Yidei Noshim Rachmonios Bishul Yaldehen, that the hands of the compassionate women actually cooked, the flesh of their own children. Presumably, it doesn't mean that they killed their children. It means, let's say, the children died, right? And then, instead of burying them, they used it for flesh. But of course, I don't have to tell you how horrible this whole business is. I mean, the famine was so severe that they were actually reduced to cannibalism in this case.
Shavias,
in the seventh year, Bisar Zeroa Sehem. They actually ate the flesh off their own arms. In other words, they started to eat their own flesh. That's how hungry they were for food. The Kayim Mashanemar, and this is in order to fulfill a pasuk which says, Ish Bisar Zeroa Yochelo. They will each of them eat the flesh of their arms. So you can see from here how horrible 7 years of famine are, and what happens to people who become reduced to the level of cannibalism until eventually they even cannibalize themselves.
So the people...
What time was this happening?
This was actually in the days of King David, believe it or not. They had a famine in the days of King David. He counted the people. He had a census. And he was not supposed to make a census of the people. Right. And so famine came. Right.
But there were people who had the cob of barley or whatever to sow. Now, these were people who saved it for seed grain and they never ate it all the way through until the seventh year?
Pardon me? Sorry.
At the beginning of the story here, we say shall we plant or we'll die?
Yeah, which right. Okay, hold it. Yeah, okay. Just a minute. I said this was the famine in the days of King David, but actually this was a different famine. This was a famine that occurred in the time of Elisha the prophet, when there was a famine in Shomron and so on. And we read
this wasn't the one that Yoel was just talking at the beginning.
Yoel is also talking about it, but the psukim over here, this particular pasuk, about the 7 years of famine, this was not in Joel. This we find in Malachim Beis, in 2 Kings, okay? Where it's, they tell about, the horrible famine that occurred in the days of Achav, in the days of you know, where Shomron was besieged and so on and so forth. So there were several different horrible famines in Jewish history.
Okay, so the one that we just described, the miracle that happened with Grow Quickly, that was a different series.
That's a different one, right. Yeah. What connects all of these over here are either disasters or miracles that occurred at various times, but also the fact that Rab Nachman asked Rab Yitzchak, explain to me, tell me about, what does this pasuk tell about? Explain this to me. And he answers him with an explanation given by Rabbi Yochanan.
Nevertheless, someone must have had the seed grain, otherwise in the 8th year they would have had nothing.
Yeah, but you're comparing this with the story in Joel.
But even so, I mean, if they were reduced to cannibalism and we survived after eating our own arms, then in the 8th year we must have had a crop.
So the famine ended.
So who had the seed grain?
Well, it doesn't mention who had it, but that may have been in the soil, and you see there was no rain all this time. Now all of a sudden rain came and made the earth fruitful again, so that the earth could once more give the yield produce. Okay? Mm-hmm. No, there's no mention made about that.
Is there something about the census?
Yeah, go ahead, Nikki.
About the census, why weren't they supposed to take a census?
In general, you're not supposed to count heads, believe it or not. This is why we say Nishtay's Nishtay, or we say Ashir Samech.
How come they mention when the Jews left Egypt, 600,000 left Egypt?
So how do we know what the census was? The answer is that in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu they took censuses, but they didn't take census by counting people. They took census by giving shekelim. Right. They gave the masses a shekel, so that's how they know. And the same thing happened again in Bamidbar, when they were getting ready to enter the land, they wanted again to find out what had happened. Yeah. How did he? He must have counted heads, because the Rebbeinu Shalom was very displeased with what David did.
Well, he should have been the one that given
the right. Okay. So anyway, there was a threat. A plague was threatened again because of his action, and eventually he prayed, and so that plague was forgiven. You understand? And as a matter of fact, in that connection, he bought the threshing floor of a man by the name of Aravno or Arnon, and there's where they established the Beis HaMikdash subsequently. And it's called Gorin Arnon, the threshing floor of Arnon. Yes.
At the time of Yaakov, they went to Egypt to buy grain.
Right.
At the time of David, did they go to the neighboring countries to buy food?
It's not written that. They could have, I guess, but it's not written that they did. But in David's time, it was more a threat of a plague than it was about famine. But the famine was very severe in the time of Eliyahu, in the time of Elisha. Then you had very serious famines taking place. But with Yoel, the famine was caused by the locusts. It was not by, lack of rain particularly. Yes.
But couldn't they go to Egypt because the Nile River was there overflowing? They could produce there.
Well, there's a good chance, right? I suppose that they could have, but it doesn't mention that they did.
Presumably some people would have. When they went, obviously people from all the countries went.
Yeah.
Now, so there was a plague everywhere for Egypt.
Yeah.
Okay, but here it's only talking about a plague in Eretz Israel.
Right.
And it was no longer a family, Yaakov's family, it was a whole population.
Of course, absolutely.
The whole population couldn't go down.
There were several million people now at this point. Sure.
So it was a different setup, because the land is now inhabited.
Right.
You couldn't just send down your 10 sons, as it were.
Yeah, right.
No, that's okay, no.
But at this point, you had a Mishlah, you had a government, you had a king, so you could send his delegates to buy on a national...
But maybe it wasn't enough. I mean, we don't know enough about the conditions at that time to make... I mean, we can only guess, but we have no definite proof about that. Of course, I mean, Eretz Israel was in contact with Egypt, was in contact with Babylonia and Ashur and Assyria and so on and so forth. When I say Syria, I mean Aram. Of course, Assyria as such didn't exist, but Aram was the kingdom over there. And you know, it's Tzor and Sidon, what today would be called, let's say, Lebanon today, but those days it was the kingdoms of Tyre and Sidon.
So there was no Yosef there to spur up the grain in Egypt at this time.
Yes, but according to what you just said.
Yeah, but even so, but there's the other one. Yosef wasn't there to save the grain so that the people could come and buy this time.
Yeah.
Egypt only had enough for itself. They didn't store the grain for 7 years of plenty this time. They just.
We don't know enough about what was happening in contemporary countries.
Exactly. If there was a famine and no rain in Israel, it could have also been
possible,
no famine and rain in the other areas, too.
It might have happened, too. It's a possibility.
They wouldn't have any grain.
Yeah. And if it wasn't preceded by seven years of plenty with the prophecy of Yosef, with the dream,
then
they wouldn't have had the stockpile to sell.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, these are all conjectures, you know.
I think I'm going to agree with you and leave it at that.
Okay, good. Let's proceed.
Stim.
Okay.
Where are we?
Now we have, the Omalay of Nachman of Rabbi Yitzchak, right? Mm-hmm. Now he asks him another question. He says, what's the meaning of the Pasuk where it says, Bekir Becho Kadosh Velo Ovo Be'ir? Now, literally, it means, the Holy One is in thy midst, or a Holy One, as we'll see, is in thy midst, depending upon how. In reality, I think it means the Holy One. In other words, Rabbeinu Shel Olam is in the midst of the people. This is what it means in the, in the prophecy of the prophet Hosea. The Lo Avo Be'ir is translated, and I shall not come in, or I shall not enter Be'ir. Be'ir, says Rashi, he gives two interpretations. One is that Ir means city. In other words, as we'll see, a reference to Yerushalayim. Or the other one is that Be'ir means actually in anger. Besitno, as he says over there. So, that being the case, it means then that Rabbeinu Shel Olam says, I, the Holy One, am in thy midst, nor will I come to you in anger. Okay? But, you know, like all psukim, when you give a drash, you give a drash. So it's a very beautiful drash. And what is the drash over here? It says, Mishum de Bekir Becho Kadosh. Is it because the Holy One is, or there is holiness in your midst? Lo Avo Be'ir, I will not enter into the city. So Amalei, so he said to him, Ochim Rabbi Yochanan. This is how Rabbi Yochanan explained it. He says, Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, blessed be He. Lo Avo Yerushalayim Shomalo, I will not enter the heavenly Jerusalem, the Jerusalem of up there, right? The heavenly Jerusalem, Ad She'ovo Yerushalayim Shomata, until I enter the Yerushalayim down below, the Yerushalayim down on the earth. Okay. Umi Iko Yerushalayim Lamalo, and is there then a heavenly Jerusalem? In, yes, Dichsiv. As the Pasuk says in Tehillim, Yerushalayim habinuya ki'ir shechubra lo yachdo. Jerusalem is built even as a city which is joined together. So, in other words, what are they saying? They're saying that just as you could interpret it either way, either that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam has a prototype of Yerushalayim up in heaven upon which Jerusalem down below was built, in that, or because the people of Israel have a Jerusalem down below, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam wants to show that he is there with his Shechina, and so therefore he has himself also in heaven a heavenly Jerusalem. Right. So the Rabbeinu Shel Olam says that I will not enter my own heavenly Jerusalem until I come back into the Jerusalem on earth. When the Rabbeinu Shel Olam returns to Yerushalayim Shalmata, the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, our people of Israel will be gathered together, and the holiness of Jerusalem will be asserted once more, so that then the Rabbeinu Shel Olam will feel free to end so-called, kibbiyachal, as we would say, as it were, his exile from the heavenly Jerusalem. He will once more return into the heavenly Jerusalem. So it's a very beautiful image, you know, about
because he will have entered the one on earth.
Right, right. So let us hope that the Takadi Yerushalayim Shalmata is worthy that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam should feel the same way about it as he does about the Yerushalayim Shalmala.
How do you get
him
to
rebuild
it?
We're waiting for the Novi to come and tell us rebuild.
Now you get rid of that piece of junk first.
Yeah, yeah. So
if they sold it to me, it would break.
I have to find the shimer, right?
I know the Mosque of Omen needed repairs, and the Al-Aqsa and so on. They needed repair work done recently. It's too bad it didn't crumble altogether. It would have been a blessing.
Maybe they'll have an earthquake, have an earthquake there under the mosque.
Yeah. Al-Aqsa is the element. That's the one with the silver dome. Like, one has a golden dome, the other one has a silver dome. Right. Keep out the cellar is the one with the golden dome. They both need it. Yeah.
You want to make a contribution?
I think that Saudi Arabia provided money for that.
Huh?
I think that the Saudis sent money for that. Yeah. But don't be surprised if the Labour government also decided to kick in money. They did. Yeah.
Okay. Onward.
V'yomalei Rab Nachman Rab Yitzchak. And another question that he asked, and he says, "My desir, what is the meaning of the Achas Yivaru Yiksolu?" Musa Abolam Eitzu, he says, and with one thing, Yivar. Now Yivar over here is from the word Ishbar Lo Yeda, right? What is Ishbar Lo Yeda? I mean, we say it all the time, Yisvush and Nashabas. Yeah, brutish man, we say, know it not, right? Right. The Chzil, right? And the fool, Lo Yovin is us, without understanding. So the Pasuk then says that with one thing, or, together, probably means together over here in the original, right? They will be foolish, they will be brutish and foolish, right? Okay.
Senseless.
Why? Senseless, if you wish. Okay. Musa Havolim, because the punishment, or rather the thing, the guide of their vanities, in other words, their, you know, the what they trust in.
Rebuke.
Right. Yeah, or what rebukes them for their vanities. Eitzu is only a piece of wood. In other words, they bow down to wooden statues, and this causes them to go astray, and therefore they act very, very foolishly. Everyone who worships the tree or the other idols, you know, idols of silver and gold, you know, they will be foolish. Okay, but.
This is a form of a
we
question.
We come to the but, right. The but is simply this. You also have to understand that, so Amalei Hachi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So he answered them as follows. So this is how Rabbi Yochanan, gave the answer to his question. He said, Achas hi, there was one thing, Shemeva Eres, Rishoyim Begehinim. Now, Mevaeris over here, it takes in the same sense like we say Bir Chametz and some. In other words, so to speak, right, it cleanses out or it burns the wicked in Gehinim. There is one particular sin which does it, and Maihi, and what is it? It says, Avedazar. This is, idolatry. Siv Hoha, here the Pasuk said, Busa Havolim Eitzu, right, that. The object of their vanities is simply a piece of wood, or sivhasam, and in another pasuk it says, Hevel Hema Maasei Tatuim. It is vanity, it's the deed of Tatuim. Tatuim means, like mistaken illusion, or whatever, right? Okay? In other words, it is idolatry which causes them to burn in Gehinnom. So, that being the case, he'd ask another question right now based upon a different pasuk. And the pasuk is also in Yirmiyahu. The Yomel Rab Nachman Rab Yitzchok, he says, "My desir, what is the meaning of the pasuk which says, Kishtayim ro'os otsami, my people have committed two evils?" Only two, he says? Tartein hu dehave? This is only two? And what did he do? There are 24, actually, maybe it should be 22, because we'll see. This is what the note on the side says, so it should be Esrim Atakte instead of Esrim. Esrim the Yarba. You see the note on the right over there? Yeah, it should be Sefer Acher, it says over there, the Tarte, because we'll see in a second why. You see the little note over there, the asterisk.
Oh.
So if you go over to the right column, all the way on the right,
all the way on the right,
so
yeah,
you see he has a different reading over there. He says that it should say Esrim the Tarte, 22. Esrim the Tarte Shrikilu, did he forgive them 22? Now what is this 22? The answer is that apparently the people of Israel were guilty of 24 major sins. Okay? This is based upon either one of two interpretations. This is Rashi points out, and Rabbeinu Gershom down at the bottom of the page, and Rabbeinu Hanan, particularly Rabbeinu Gershom, they go into it in greater detail. Rabbeinu Hanan particularly over here. First of all, let me give you the easy explanation. The easy explanation is as follows. The number 24 is the traditional listing of the number of books that we have in the entire Tanakh, entire Bible. If you count, you'll see that there are 39. But the answer is, how do you count them? All right, we know that the five books, the Torah, that's five. Okay. Yehoshua is another one, Shoftim is another one, right? And then the question is, we divide Shmuel into Shmuel Aleph and Shmuel Beis, right? Malachim Aleph and Malachim Beis. But for the 24, Shmuel Aleph and Beis is continued simply as the book of Shmuel, right? And Malachim is considered as one book. Okay. Then when we come to the prophets, you have, of course, Yeshayahu, you have Yirmiyahu, and you have Yechezkel. These are all separate ones. But then you have 12 smaller prophets. As I said, I don't like the word minor, because to us, minor means that they're not as important as the other ones. And every prophet is important. They're all Kedoshim. They all deserve the respect, and they all have something to teach us. So that's why I don't like to use the word minor. This comes from the Latin Bible, I have to tell you. The Latin Bible speaks about prophetae minores, meaning, the smaller ones, okay? Because their books are not as big as, Yeshayahu and Yirmiyahu and Yechezkel, where you have 66, you have 48, and you have 52. You have 52 and 48, okay? So the others, Hosea, for example, runs to 14 chapters. Others run to only 7. And going all the way down to Obadiah, which consists, the entire book is only one chapter, okay?
And so is the one we read on Yom Kippur.
Yeah, that's, Yonah? Right, Yonah has 4 chapters, correct.
Right.
Yeah, okay. So that's why they call them the minor prophets, but I don't like the word, as I said, because it...
they weren't minors.
It's pejorative, in my opinion. Okay. So getting back to this, if we count it on that basis, if we count Ezra and Nehemiah as being one book, because they have a related theme, okay? And if we count, for example, Divrei Hayomim Aleph and Beis,
the 12 prophets you would count as one?
As one, correct. Okay. Right, exactly.
12 is one.
Yeah. So on that basis, that's how, whereas we count 39 separate books, but traditionally we count 24 books of the Tanakh, okay, the Bible, Torah, Neviim, Ksuvim. So one explanation is that they committed every single sin in the books, of all the books of the Torah, Neviim, Ksuvim. So that's one explanation given by Rashi. But as I said, Rabbeinu Hananel and the others, right, they refer to a chapter in the book of Yechezkel, where Yechezkel says, Hasishpot, Hasishpot, Yisrael Adamim, where you judge the city in which blood is being shed all the time. And then he goes into a catalog of all kinds of different things. I'll read you some of them from Rabbeinu Hanano. You have Rabbeinu Hanano on the side. Okay. Okay. Yes. So he says, "Yesh ben hachomim hamforshim shohi omim kap dalad rose elu."
Top line.
It's actually the top line.
No. At the bottom.
Right below the big text. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeish.
All right. First of all, remember, right, it says, Tate Bilakudhu David. Okay, they only committed two evils. Kavbe Shavikalahu. Did he forgive them, the 22 others? Right? So, Yesh Misha Meforish, he says, there are those who explain what are the 24. The Chiyesh Avera Aksuva Bechav Dalit Sforim. Is there any Avera written in the 24 books of the Bible, Kloma B'mikra, Shaleo Suoso, which they didn't commit? There isn't a single Avera. This is my first explanation that I gave you, right? Mike Siv Kishtaim Rose, so then why does it say only two? Right? You can skip the parenthesis. But he says, we have a tradition from our rabbis, from our teachers, that these are the following 24 sins. Bechan. Bechan heim eforish and betalmud. Betalmud Eretz Yisrael. And he says that they happen to be listed in the Talmud that we call the Yerushalmi. In other words, the Talmud that was in Eretz Yisrael, not the Talmud Bavli. The Perek, Eilu shein lehem chelek. This is the last chapter in Sanhedrin. Okay? So there they list various sins. Yesh ben ha-chachum ha-mfoshim choy omrim kav dalet ros eilu hein ha-nidboros v'hai kro osi ozvim ha-korchayim l'achzev lehem and so on. Ozvei Yisrael Hashem. He says in this pasuk, in this chapter in Yirmiyahu also complains about 24 acts of apostasy that they committed. So he lists those. And then a little bit further down he says there are chav dalet chatoz hokiach yechezkel ha-novis Yisrael the parshas ha-sishpot yisir ha-domin eilu hein Yerushafech is dumb. He accuses them of being a city which sheds blood. They also saw Gilulim, and also it committed, it did all kinds of disgusting things, an idolatrous worship to Me'as Hashem. It is, brings God's name into. Tumah, it's the opposite of Kiddush Hashem, so this is the Tumah Hashem, right? It's a profanation of God's name, right? And Rabbah Samuhumor, and there's a city which is filled with confusion, there is no stable government over there. Yishle Zrola Hoyaboch, Elamanshfoch Dom, and everybody simply exercises his own power of the arm in order to shed blood. In other words, there is no set of justice, and no sense of it, but everybody's simply at will that they kill it. The Bible says some of the things going on in New York right now, or in other cities. And then, Obeim Hekelu Bach, they showed no regard for their father or their mother in the midst of the city. Lagiera Subi Oshek Besocheik, right? And the stranger they dealt with, they oppressed. And Yosem Yalmona Honubach, and they cheated, they deceived the widow and the orphan and so on, etc., etc. Right. And other things, you despise. I'm not going to read the whole catalog, but, if you're interested, you could find it in the book of Yechezkel. But he accuses them of profaning God's sanctuary, profaning the sacrifices, of murder, of incest, adultery, etc., etc., etc. So there are 24 different things that he accuses them of. All right. Now, why then did Yirmiyahu say to the people only Kishtayim Ros Osuami that they committed two evils, right? And what are they? So, Omale Hochim Arabachim. So he answered him, this is how Rabbi Yochanan explained. He says, Achatz hi, there is one, Shehi Shekulo Kishtayim. There's one sin that they committed which is the same value, so to speak, as if they had committed two sins. They only committed one sin, but this one sin is the equivalent of two sins. Right. Umay nihu, and what is the sin? The answer is it's Avodah Zarah, idolatry. Dichsiv, as the Pasuk there said, in Yirmiyahu it says, Kishtayim ros osa ami, my people has committed two evils. Osi odzvu, they have deserted me. I who am Mekor Mayim Chayim, the fountain of living waters. Lachzov lehem boros, boros nishborim, in order to hew out for themselves cisterns. And these are cisterns which are broken. In other words, instead of going to the living Torah, the living Word of God, and having the inspiration from Him, they built themselves cisterns. A cistern is, you know, as a hole in the ground in which they would...
collect water.
Yeah, in order to collect water in the ground, they would line it with plaster in order to hold water. But these plaster imitations for the real thing were even broken. They couldn't even hold water. Shelo yachilu amayim, as he says, that they cannot hold the water. It's what the pasuk says over there in Yirmiyahu. So that was a mistake. And not only, you know, it was a sin. They went after Avodah Zorah instead of a god. And furthermore, it says concerning the sin that they committed, the prophet turns and he says to them, Ki yivru iyechi tiyimuru, he says, go, he says, to the isles of the Kittim. The Kittim were people who lived along the coastline of Asia Minor. In other words, the islands of Greece, of Turkey, and people like that, okay? So go, he says, to those islands, Uru, and see, the Kedar, or go to the Arab nations of Kedar, Shilchu, send the Hisbonenu Miyot, and go and observe very, very closely, and see, what? Ha-Hemir Goy Elohim, Ve-Hemelo Elohim. Did any one of those nations ever turn its back upon its God, even though they're not really God? Yet the Ami, my nation, my people, Hemir Kibodo, has turned its back upon its glory, meaning God, below your will for something which cannot even help them. Matana, and he explained, Kusiyim Ovdim La'esh. The people of Kusi, or Kittim, you know, they worship fire. The Kedorim, who do they worship? Ovdim Lamayim, they worship mortar. The Afal Pi Sheyodim Shehamayim Mechaben Esoresh, and even though they know that water can put out fire, Lohemir Elehehem, they did not turn their backs, they did not, betray their gods. And of course, I mean, you could say the same thing, just as water puts out fire, but what does fire cause water to do?
To evaporate.
You see. So that in either case, they realized that, you know, what they worshipped did not have the power, and yet they never were disloyal to their own teachings. Right. And Israel was disloyal to its God. The Ami Hemir Kivodi Velovi. My nation has betrayed my glory, literally exchanged my glory for something which cannot help it. All right, I'll do a couple of more. The Yomaloi Nachman Rabbi Yitzchak, my Dechsiv, says, tell me, what is the meaning of the event that we read about, the incident we read about Shmuel? It says, Vayi kasher zaken Shmuel. And it came to pass when Shmuel became old. So the Gemara says, and Misiv Shmuel kulehai, was Shmuel really that old? V'hoa banun beishab, wasn't he 52 years old? The Omar Mar, even as you know, one of the rabbis says, this is Gemara in Merkotten, where it says, Meis benun beishona, if a person dies at the age of 52, Zehu misasal shal Shmuel harabasi. This is the year, this is the age at which Shmuel, who came from Ramah, died. So Amalei Hochem HaRavichman. So he said, this is what Rabbi Yochanan said in connection with that. He says, not that, he was actually a zaken, right? By Hiki Zaken, Kasher Zaken Shmuel, he wasn't really that old, he says, but Zikna Kotzpo Olav. It happened that he externally became old before his time. In other words, he already had gray hair and everything else, and all those things that we associate with old age. This happened to Shmuel when he was already 52. Dichsiv, as the Pasuk says, this is in connection, if you remember, where Shmuel told Shaul to go and to fight against the Amalekites, right? Mm-hmm. And then he carried on the war, but he spared Agag, the king of Amalek. And as a result, so God appeared unto Shmuel Hanovi, and he said to him, Nechamti, I regret, he says, Ki Melachti Yeshuul, I regret that I made Shaul king. So Amar Lefono, so Shmuel said to him, Rebbeinu Shel Olam, Shekaltadi K'Moshe V'Aaron. He says, you know, you have compared me with Moshe and Aaron. Dichsiv, as the Pasuk says, Moshe V'Aaron Mechonov, right? that Moshe and Aaron among his Kohanim, Ushmuel the Karishmol, and Shmuel among those who call upon God's name. So Ma Moshe v'Aaron lebotul matzayudehem b'chayehem. So even as in the case of Moshe and Aaron, their work was never made void in their own lifetime. In other words, there was always, as we would say, a continuity to the work that they had initiated. So Afani lo yisbatel matzayudai b'chayayim. Please, O God, he says, I don't want the work that I have done to be, destroyed in my own lifetime. In other words, if you say, I don't want Saul anymore, it's a reflection upon me. I was the one who was told by you to anoint Saul, and am I going to see then what I did, immediately destroyed? So my Kodesh Baruch Hu, so the Holy One said, Hechi Avid, what should I do? Limo Shaul, should Saul die? Lo Koshovik Shmuel. Then Shmuel would not permit that. Limo Shmuel, Azuta, if Shmuel should die young, then Meramne Abasre. So people were starting to talk behind his back and say, hey, you know why he died so young? It's because he was a guy who lived a very sinful life, so God punished him by, taking him at an early age. So, lo limos Shaul, lo limos Shmuel, and should Shaul not die, and should Shmuel not die, for he gave Malchus David. The time has already come now for the kingdom of David to come into existence. And we have a tradition that says that one nation, that one malchus cannot touch the malchus of another one even by a hair's breadth. In other words, once this is over, then immediately it's the time for the next one. So Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu, so the Kodesh Baruch Hu said, okay, I know what to do. Akpitz alav zikno, I will literally cause old age to jump upon him. In other words, I will, make him very old even before his time. And Haina Desir, then this is the meaning of Bishol Yoshe Bagiva Tachasa Eshel Barama, that Shol was dwelling in Giva underneath the Eshel is the terebinth, in Rama. The Chima Inyon Giva Eshel Rama. Tell me, what is the connection between Giva and Rama? Geographically, Giva is in Shevet Binyamin. Rama is in Shevet Ephraim. So how do they put the two of them together? How could he be sitting under an Eshel in Rama when he's at the same time in Giva and Binyamin? Elolom alachol, but rather the pasuk implies the following. It says, Mi goram li shaul sheyesh b'giva shtei shanam v'echza. Says, who was it who brought about the fact that Shaul could continue to reign in the city of Giva for 2.5 more years? It was Tfiloso Shel Shmuel HaRamasi. It was because of the prayer of Shmuel HaRamasi. So that when it says over there, Tachas HaEshel Beroma, Beroma is the place where Shmuel came from, and Eshel implies that he was the great tree, in other words, who the people of Israel could rely upon for judgment. We have a Gemara, for example, that speaks about, when you want to know whose opinion that you should follow in the Pesach, the difference of opinion.
Yes.
So you should prove, you should hang on to Ashlela Ashle Rabriva. Tremendous Ashle. In other words, if you have a strong terebinth, in other words, you have an excellent source, that's the one that you should hang on to in order to write, to decide what to do. So it was then the Eshel, the strength and the prayers of Shmuel that enabled Saul to have another 2.5 years of kingship. The Gemara now asks, so now it says, and tell me, can one person be pushed aside in place of another person? In other words, will the Rabbeinu Shalom do something like that? So he says, yes. It happens at times. The Omer Rab Shmuel Ban Achmeini, Omer Rab Yonason, this is the correct reading, Rab Yonason said, "My dechsev, what is the meaning of the pasuk? Al kain, chatzavti banavim haraktim bi imrei pi. Therefore, I hewed with my prophets. In other words, it's as if the prophets were like an axe, you know, chopping away, and I slew them with the words of my mouth. B'ma'aseihem lo ne'emar ela b'yemefi. Doesn't say that I slew them for their deeds, but only says that I slew them with the words of my mouth. In other words, the Rabbeinu Shalom at times sometimes will take away a person in his young years, not because he was evil or anything like that, but sometimes it happens that the Rabbeinu Shalom has a higher purpose in life that we don't understand, and that he can do it. So Alma, so from this we already see that Mitchei Gavra Mekamei Gavra, that it is possible for a person to be removed because the time has come for another person, you know, to become important. Okay.
I don't really follow that, to tell you the truth.
Well, all right, but Shmuel, and the point is, why should the Rabbeinu Shalom remove Shmuel in order to...
For David to reign.
Right.
Yeah.
For Saul, we can understand. He was pushed aside so that David could now become king. Mm-hmm. But indeed. Why Shmuel?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the answer is because this also...
I don't understand the quotation.
Shmuel carried out the, you know, his mission by anointing David as king secretly, but from that point on, his role was finished.
David was referring
see,
to
I can't David. Follow the sentence after, the Chotzavti business.
The Chotzavti literally means a yud. I'm translating it the way they understand it, all right?
I mean, I don't understand the connection of this explanation. Chotzavti bandim haragtim, it might be.
Okay. It means I chopped them down with, in other words, I chopped the sinners, or whoever it was that he's referring, you know, mm-hmm. by
okay.
sending the prophets in order to, you know, to instruct them what is right. And when they disobeyed, then haraktim shevet pi. And I slew them with the words of my mouth. Okay? So that this is how they interpret it.
That's what it's...
Yeah, it's not a very easy pasuk to understand, but this is how they
touch
it.
The way they've explained it here.
Right, this is the way they touch it. Okay? Because otherwise it is a very difficult pasuk to understand.
Okay, so it wasn't because of what they did, it was because of Hashem's decree, the word
right,
of his mouth.
Right, right. Ben Shalom decreed that this should happen, exactly. Okay, we'll stop at this point. We'll start next week with a very, very beautiful story, which follows around this. This is still part of the... Rab Nachman asked Rab Yitzchak, tell me what is the meaning of this, and he tells him, you know, this is what Rabbi Yochanan said, and we'll have a very, very beautiful story to begin with next week. Okay? We are on Hay, Omid Beis, about two-thirds of the way down.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's now January 26th, 1993.
Right.
94.
Right. Who's ready?
I'm sorry. My apologies, I didn't mean to hold
that's
that up.
Okay. That's
this
okay.
This says Dalit. Where's Beth Hay? What do you call Dalit?
Okay, this is Dalit. This is Hay. Now, Omid Beis is this side over here. Okay? That's Dabot. In other words, every blot in the Gemara has two sides, Aleph and Beis.
I see, yeah.
You know, Omid Aleph and Omid Beis, okay?
Yeah.
All right, so...
But where does it say Beth Hay here? Where does it
say?
It doesn't.
Page.
You see, though, right.
The back side.
They only print it on the first side.
Yeah. Here's Hay.
Hay, and where's the Dalit then? Here it just says
Daf,
Hay.
Daf,
that's
Daf.
Hay.
It's Daf Hay. Not Dalit.
Daf means
Daf.
Page.
A page, definitely.
Yeah, okay. And Amud means literally color.
Amud is color.
By the way, the pictures, the copies will be ready sometime this week.
Okay. Very good.
Okay.
Okay, so we are ready. We are now two-thirds of the way down.
Okay.
We start again with our heroes on this page, Rab Nachman, Rab Yitzchak. Okay. So they are now gathered together at a Suda. Gemara starts by saying, Rab Nachman, Rab Yitzchak, Aviyaspe Besudasa. They were sitting at a banquet. Okay. So, Amalei Rab Nachman Rab Yitzchak. So, Nachman said to Rab Yitzchak, he said, Lema Ma Milso, say if it's a good word. Okay? You see where we are?
Yeah, okay.
Lema Ma Milso.
Yeah.
Say, give us a good word, okay? So, Amalei, so he said to him, Ochirama Rab Yochanan, again, he quotes Rab Yochanan. for good words. Okay, so he says, this is what Rabbi Yochanan said. He says, Ein Mesichi Mesehudo. He says, don't carry on a conversation when you're at a meal. Shema Yakdim Konanabesha. Because of the problem that it may be that the windpipe will get priority over the esophagus. In other words, you're liable to choke
on the food
by talking. And there's only Streffen. I mean, we've all had cases, you know, where you started to talk and the first thing you know is going down the wrong track.
Jackie Goldberg lost his son that way.
Is that how he died?
Choked on a piece of food in the restaurant, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You know Jack Goldberg.
Yeah, sure. Not only that, I had a son many, many years ago.
Alan, Alan, Alan. Very nice. He's about to get married, too.
Yeah. Huh. I didn't know that that's what had happened. So, Shema Yakim Kodun Leveshet, right? So that, lest the windpipe get there ahead of the esophagus, the Yovel Yudei Sakon, and he will then enter into a state of danger, become a dangerous situation. Bosa the Sod, but then after he had finished eating, right, after they finished dining, so Omalei, so he said to him, Hochi Yomar Rabbi Yochanan, says, here's a good word that Rabbi Yochanan said. He says to him, Yaakov Avinu Lomeis, our father Jacob did not die. So Omalei, he said unto him, V'chi dichti soktu saptanayo v'chontu chamatayo v'kovru kavraya. He says, tell me, how is it possible the people made the hespedim, in other words, you know, those who eulogized, they eulogized, in other words, they were eulogizing for nothing. Or the chontu chamatayo, of course, remember that what happened to Yaakov Avinu? The embalmers embalmed him. Remember right, that they embalmed right. him so that they could take him back to Canaan, right? The Kovru Kavraya, and those who buried him. How can you tell me that he never died? So Amalei, so he answered him and he said, Mikra Nidoresh. He said, what I'm doing, I'm teaching a posik. Okay? In other words, I'm giving you a drash on the posik.
Shenemar.
Yeah. Shenemar, posik says, posik in Yom Yod says, V'yata al tira avdi yakev di yuman anoi, Yaltechas Yisrael. And you, do not fear, O my servant Yaakov, saith the Lord, nor be affrighted, O Israel, ki hinani moshiachobe rachok, because I will save you even from afar. In other words, no matter how far you may be scattered over the earth, but nevertheless God says, I will save you. V'yezaracho, and I will also save your children, may eret shivyon, from the land of their captivity. And he says, take a look. In the Pasuk, Makeshu Lezareh, we see that he compares him, in other words, Yaakov, right, to Yaakov's children. You know, it says, right. Yeah, take a look again at the Pasuk, right?
Yeah.
Do not fear, O my servant Jacob, right?
No.
Nor be afraid of Israel, because I will save you from afar, right?
Yeah.
And your children also will I save. I mean, I'm adding the word also, but
yeah.
And your children from the land of their captivity.
Okay.
So, in other words, in the pasuk, we're making a comparison between him and between his children. All right. So, what is the reason for the comparison? So, this is what Rabbi Yochanan says. He says, "Ma zaro b'chaim." Just as his children are alive, afu b'chaim, so is he alive. A very beautiful idea, I mean.
B'chaim,
afu b'chaim, right. As long as your children are alive and living in accordance with your teachings, that they live, you know, in accordance with Yiddishkeit and so on, it's as if you yourself are alive. And the same thing is true. As long as the people of Israel continue to observe Torah in this way, and to keep the Torah, then, you know, in that way we know that Yaakov Avinu is alive. And this is why, for example, they made a song, you know, afterwards, you know, that Od Avinu Chai, right, Od Avinu Chai, and so on. So in other words, our father is still alive. Because as long as we continue, so that's it. And he is alive too. Okay? We can take a look at the Rashi for a minute.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. It's up a couple of lines over there. Okay. It says Ma Zaro B'Chaim. You see it?
Yeah.
So Rashi explains that
Just as his children are alive, Kishehu Mekabesh Yisrael Me'ot Shivyon, right? When God will gather together the people of Israel from the land of their captivity, Achayim U'Mekabesh. After all, who is God going to gather together? Those who are alive. Shehem Bishvi, right? Because they are in captivity. Rashi says, the dead, they're not in captivity. They've been released, you know, from the Tzaras. But Afu Bachayim, so he too is alive, Sheyivienu Bagola, that he will bring him into, in other words, the Rabbeinu Shalom is going to bring Yaakov Avinu into the captivity, Kedei Ligol Isbonov La'enov, in order to redeem his children, in order to save his children in his own eyes. In other words, that Yaakov Avinu will be able to see how God is gathering the people of Israel together from the lands of their dispersion, from the lands of their captivity. Kemo Shebetzinu Mitzrayim, even as we saw in Egypt, Vayah Yisrael, that Israel saw. Now, what Vayah Yisrael is talking about, he's probably talking about the fact that, Yaakov Avinu saw the children of Yosef, you know, Ephraim and Manasseh and so on, and he was disconcerted. He didn't know what they were doing, you know, according to the usual sermon idea, you know, the idea is that they were dressed like Egyptians and that they looked like typical Egyptians. They didn't look like Yiddish kinder, right? So Yosef had to assure him. He said, Bonaihe, these are my children, he says, and God granted them unto me. And so then Yaakov said, you know, Kochem inai b'avarchem, so bring them to me and I will bless them. So he could see what the descendants of his own son, in other words, what his grandchildren are, and he could see that they were alive and living as Jews. This is the point, okay? Now, this is how Rashi explains it. Yeah, well, let's finish first of all Rashi over there. Mm-hmm. Vidarshin, it says, and we make a drash that Yisrael Saba, Israel is literally the grandfather or the old man, right? Udechanto Chanataya Nidnalehem Shemes. Now, when Rashi says, when those who embalmed him, so it seemed to them Shemes that he was dead. Abol Chai Hoyo, he was really alive. Okay, now that's Rashi's explanation. If we take a look at Tosfos, we'll see. Tosfos has a very simple explanation. Yaakov Avinu lo meis, says he did not die, and he says v'chei mashma, and he says, and this we also learn the exir from the pasuk that says vayigva, you know, he expired, but below kasir vayomos, but it's not written that he died, whereas in other places where it's written, you know, about people and they use the expression, you know, vayigva, so it says vayigva vayomos. He expired and he died. And here with Yaakov Avinu, doesn't say the word and he died. So that this is proof, says Tosfos, that Yaakov Avinu is still alive. Kim Neforish Besoitas, Gemara says on Gemara Seita, Gabi Masi de Chushim. Story over there about Chushim Ben Dan. Okay. So, we learn then that as long as we have Yiddish Kinder, then Yaakov Avinu lomets. Not dead. Okay, now we learn another very, very beautiful vault that he had to say. Well, first we have a little one. Not such a beautiful vault. We'll have a beautiful vault. I promise you, we're going to have a beautiful vault. Okay. About Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak says, Kol ha'emer Rachav, Rachav, miyad nikre. He says, whoever says Rachav, Rachav, immediately he has a seminal omission.
Really?
So of course we have to understand
what's meant Rachav.
The answer is that if you remember the story about Yehoshua, he sent two spies secretly into the city of Jericho, and they were to spy out the land. You know, that's what Rabin should have been doing. He wasn't spying out to see what's happening over there. So he sent out these two people, and the word came to the king of Jericho that there are Hebrew spies in the city, and they started to search all over to find them and kill them.
Sure.
And Rachav Hazona, she took pity upon them, right, and she hid them, and she gave some excuse to the people who were searching that she said, yeah, they had been here, but they are long departed, and I saw them go out of the city and so on and so forth, so that they didn't find them, and they were able eventually to escape.
She hid them on the roof.
Right, and return, you know, so they promised that they would spare her and her family and so on when the city fell, okay? Now, according to the Medrash, Rachel is a very beautiful woman. So that apparently the fact, I mean, that the Bible says that she was a zona, which is understood in one of two ways, okay?
Zona is a widow.
No. Zona means a prostitute.
Zona
is a prostitute. But since many of our sages didn't like the idea of saying that, because they afterwards they say that, you know, she did children, she became a Giyoris, she became converted to Yiddishkeit and so on. So, for that reason, they give another interpretation of the word Zona. Zona, they said, comes from the word Zon. In other words, she was an innkeeper. And this actually is the translation that we have in the Targum. They call it Pundakayat. Pundak in Aramaic means an inn. So Pundakayat, you know, means that she was an innkeeper. So that's a much nicer interpretation. But at any rate, the idea being that this woman is so beautiful that immediately a person, you know, gets sexually excited as soon as the mention of a name is right around. So Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, he says then that anybody who says, Rachav, Rachav, in other words, he sees a beautiful woman, and he says, oh, boy, look at that Rachav over there. What a Rachav over there. So Miyad Nikra immediately has seminal emission. So Omalei Rab Nachman, so Rab Nachman said to him, he said, I can say Rachav, Rachav, but always pass lead. It doesn't make any difference to me. Nothing's going to happen to me. So Omalei, so he said it to him, yeah, Ki Kamina, it's B'yodov Makira, he says. When I say that if a person says Rachav, Rachav, it's if he knows who she is and he recognizes who she is. Of course, I don't know what it means exactly in the sense of no. No may possibly interpret, you know, it could mean more than simply knowledge. It might be, you know, that maybe he's had relations with her in the past or something like that.
Maybe he used her before.
Yeah, maybe, right, okay. So at any rate...
never on Shabbos, though.
Yeah, because, I mean, after, you know, Yoda and Makira. In modern Hebrew, we make a distinction between the two. Okay? But biblical Hebrew did not really make a great distinction.
Modern Hebrew or Rachav?
No. Between the word Yodea and between the word Makir. That's what I mean. Yodea in modern Hebrew means that you know facts.
Facts.
In other words, I know that he's coming, or I know how to do something, or something like that. You understand? You know, do you know what day he's arriving? You know, that's factual information. This is Yodea. Whereas Makir, this is used for people.
Doesn't it say when he knew his wife in other parts of the world?
Yeah, that's what
and she
I'm
became
saying.
Pregnant.
That's what I said.
Doesn't it say that he knew his wife and then she was pregnant later on?
Right. First it says, Vayeda so and so as Ishto, right? And then Tahar, and then she became pregnant. And so on. Right.
So knowing, so that's tantamount to having relations.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So that's why I say that maybe over here there is, you know, like an undertone of that too, in the fact that, you know, it says Yoda, he knows her, or Makira, and he recognizes her. But Rashi simply says that Yoda and Makira, they're synonyms for each other. That's how Rashi takes it. Okay. However, Tosfos agrees with me. Take a look at the Tosfos. Tosfos says, the Yoda Makira come in, it says, perish be Yoda or Shebo Oleha. In other words, he's already had relations with her, right?
Uh-huh.
A Makira, and he recognizes her, Shiro, so that he sees her. So at any rate, I mean, it's understood then that you know.
You had to know her to
exactly.
To appreciate her.
Exactly, right, okay? Mm-hmm. Having had the time of her already, so he gets immediately excited when he
gets excited and he has a seven.
Right.
feeding of dollars.
Yeah. Now in parentheses it says Uchamatsky Reshmo, and also when he mentions her name, but you know, a lot of the commentators say that that's already been added and it's not necessary, right? Okay, now we're coming to that beautiful
word,
word that I said, Zeh Shenavo. Okay, all right. Ki havi mi patrei mi hadodei. Now, when they took leave of each other, Omalei levochon mar. So he said unto him, please give me a blessing. Omalei. So his answer was, Em sholuchon moshel. Says, I'll give you a parable. L'mor adov adoyme. What is it like? He says, L'odom shehoyo hoylech b'midbor. Can be compared to the case of a man who had been going through the desert, and he was hungry, he was tired, he was thirsty, right? And then he came across, he found a tree, Sheperoso Mesukin, whose fruits were sweet, the Tzilo Noe, and his shade was beautiful, the Amas Hamayim of Eres Tachtov. And there was a stream of water passing underneath it, you know, right near the roots of the tree, right at the bottom. So, Ochal mipeirosov, so he ate of its fruit, Vishosam and Meimov, and he drank of its waters, Vishosam and Tzilo, and he sat in its shade, Uchshedikesh Leilev, and when he wanted to leave, Omar, he said, Ilon, Ilon, Bame Avarechachot. Says, tree, O tree, how shall I bless you? Imo mar lecho, if I should say to you, sheyuhu perusechem esukin, that may your fruit be sweet, harei perusechem esukin, your fruit are sweet. Sheyehi tzilchon noe, that your shade should be beautiful. Harei tzilchon noe, behold, your shade is beautiful. That a stream of water should be passing, you know, at your feet, so to speak. So, just talk about what it is. You do have, you know, a stream of water passing at the bottom or at your feet. Hello. But this is the blessing. He wrote song. May it be God's will. That every plant that comes out of you, you kamoisecha, that may they be just like you. Afato, so he says, now he turns to him and he says, and you too, he says, what blessing shall I give unto you? Imba Torah, hare Torah. If I bless you that you should be great in Torah, you are great in Torah. Imba Osher, if I should bless you that you should be wealthy, hare Osher, you have wealth. In bebonim, should I bless you that you shall have children? Arei bonim, you have children. Elo yehi ratzon, but my wish, my prayer is, may it be God's will, sheyehu tzeetzoye meyecho kemosecho, that those children who will, you know, descend from you, in other words, the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren, so on, may they be just like you. As I told you, this is a very, very beautiful problem.
Who
said this to Richard? Okay, this is Rab Nachman saying it to Rab Yitzchak.
Rab Yitzchak.
Yeah. Rab Yitzchak. Yeah. All right. Now we get back to again, remember the business about Yore for Malkosh. And we translated Yore is the former rain, and Malkosh the is matter. The latter rain, the later rain. Okay? So now they want to find out, why is it called Yore? I mean, why doesn't it simply say Geshem? Geshem Rishon, Geshem Sheni, or something like that, you understand? Why does it have special names? And one name is called Yore, and then afterwards they'll discuss, why is the other one called Malkosh, okay? All right, so why is it called Yore? Tana Rabbanan. So now we're going to see that there are different suggestions given why it's called Yore. One suggestion is, Shemores Habriyos, La'atiyach gagoy sehen, u'la'achdin sperit sehen, la'asiz kotzor chehen. Okay. One is that the word Yoreh is like the word Moreh. Matter of fact, remember that when we had the quotation from the Sefer Yoel about the blessing that the time of the that Rabbeinu Shalom, after the plague of the locusts and the famine, that God says, you know, I'm going to give you a Moreh Litzdoko. So we said this does not simply mean the teacher over there, but the word Moreh over there is the same as Yoreh. In other words, rain, which will be a rain of God's salvation, that God will send this rain in order to help them. So we see that the word Yoreh and Moreh are related to each other. So if you say that it means teacher, so what does it teach? So one interpretation is that it teaches as Abrios, it teaches human beings, the Hatir Gagosehen, that they better put plaster on the roof, not like the roof of Kadima, you know, which leaks here and leaks there and so on and so forth, right? Well, a hachnis perusehen, and also they should gather their fruits in, because if they're going to leave it out in the rain, it's going to spoil, so that this is the time that they better gather in what they have out in the field, right? Well, so it's called tochehen, and they should do all the things that are necessary, obviously, you know, whatever is necessary for, you know, with carry on life during the time that the season is now no longer the season of growth, but the season of harvesting, and you have to learn how to eat from these things and so on in the midst of the bad weather. David?
Just a quick question.
Sure.
Rabim of Gog is Gagol, not Gagim?
In the Gemara, it's always Gagol. Okay. Yeah, Gagotehan. Right. You have to realize that.
Today, is it Gagim or Gagol?
Probably Gagot. Yeah. Tendency in modern Hebrew seems to be, not in every case, I can't generalize 100%, but the tendency seems to be to take the Gemara version, so to speak, and use that for plurals or certain words. You don't know whether are they masculine or feminine. Because in the Bible, take a word like derech. Okay? Derech sometimes is masculine. As a matter of fact, we had a famous example just in this past week's laying. Haderech Yelkabah. Oh! As a matter of fact, there it is feminine, because it says Yelkabah, right? Bah means in it, but it's feminine, all right? But we have others, you know, that the word derech is masculine, right? Shemesh sometimes is considered masculine, Shemesh sometimes is considered feminine, okay? But in modern Hebrew, our tendency is to use the feminine for these words, for derech and for shemesh and for ruach, these words which at times in the Bible will be either masculine or feminine, but we normally consider them feminine today, modern Hebrew. So the same thing happens with some of the plurals as well, but it's not universal at times, you know, that the preference is for the biblical form rather than for the Gemara form, so to speak. All right, so then one interpretation of the word Yoreh is that it teaches people that the time has come that you have to take care of the things that are appropriate to the season. Dover Acher, another interpretation, that the word Yoreh is Shemarbe Es Ha'oretz. In other words, they say that it's related to the word Raveh. Raveh in Hebrew means like to saturate with water, all right? Or to moisten with water. Okay. So that marveh es ha'oretz, it saturates the water, it saturates the earth with water, umashke atahom, and it makes it, and gives it as much, it gives it literally to drink, you know, the word mashke, to drink, right? And it enables it to drink. Or in other words, it gives it enough liquid at the home so that the water actually penetrates right to the very depths. In other words, you know, you can have only water superficially on the ground, right, just on the surface. But a good Yoreh, this rain actually goes, it not only wets the ground, but also it saturates the ground, it soaks it, and it enables, you know, the water to form like a water table, so to speak. So that's another interpretation why it's called Yoreh. Okay? Shenemar, and they bring a pasuk from Tehillim in order to bring out this idea.
Pasuk in Tehillim says Lameha Rabe, which means soak the furrows that have been created, you know, in the earth. Nachas gududeho birvivim, and then you bring joy unto the various gududeho. In this particular case, it doesn't mean what it normally does. Gudud usually means bands or groups of soldiers or, you know, groups and so on. But over here, gududeho means what you have cut down. From the word gadod, also means that. In other words, it causes, you know, the areas that you have harvested, you know, to become saturated with the rain. Timogagdot simcho, and then the thing that grows becomes wet. And simcho tevorech. In other words, the earth which has become moistened with the rain that God has given, so this brings a blessing. In other words, you, Rabbeinu Shalom, bring blessing to the tzimcha, to the tzemach, to the those things that grow. So that the idea then over here is that yore is related to the word raveh, you know, saturated, right? Saturated with enough moisture and so on, and it causes all these things, you know, all causes the earth and those things that are planted in it, you know, to have the blessing of growth. Okay, so that's one another interpretation that we have. Now he says the Rachel, another interpretation. Why is it called Yore? So this time they relate it to the word Yoreid. Okay, they say she Yoreid benachas, the Yena Yoreid bezav, the Yore. It drops gently from heaven. It's a gentle rain and not a rain, you know, a stormy or an angry rain. Zav normally means anger, okay? So this is a gentle rain and not an angry rain, okay? O, Eino Yore, Elisha Masheris Aperos, Masheris Azoy, Masheris Elos. Or maybe another idea, maybe. Maybe it's Yoreh because what? Shemasher is apparent, it causes the fruits to fall. Umashtif is asroim, and it also causes the seeds to become wet. Umashtif is wilonos, it also causes the trees to become wet. Maybe that's the reason why it's called that. So Talmud Lomar. So therefore, the Pasuk says in the Krishma that we say, you know, that Malkosh is also Malkosh. Why does it say, you know, Yore u Malkosh? Right? So he says, Ma Malkosh le Bracha, just as we know that Malkosh is there in order to bring a Bracha to humanity, so Af Yore le Bracha. So Yore also is there in order to bring a Bracha to humanity. O Eino Malkosh ele Shemapi le Sabotim, Umishaber Esu Ilonos, Malas Hasakoyim, or maybe Malkosh, you might say, is supposed to be harmful. Shemapiel sabotim, it causes the houses to fall, or meshabres haylonos, it breaks the trees, umales hasakoyin, and it brings crickets upon the earth. In other words, it brings locusts, or crickets, and so on. Maybe it's bringing all these bad things upon the earth. So Talmud Lomar, this is why the pasuk again says Yore umalkosh, right? Ma Yore the bracha, just as Yore, as we already said, is there not to bring bracha, so af malkosh the bracha. So we see then that in any case, these rains that are mentioned in the Shema Yisrael, you know, v'hoyim shemoa, and so on, so on, Nasati, you know, Mataratz Chem B'yito, Yore Malkosh, you know, this is because God wants us to have a bracha, and that's why it says, V'yosaftes t'konecho, v'soros v'tzerecho. As a result of these rains, you gather in your grain, your wine, your oil, these things. Okay? So now they say, the Yore Gufe Menalon, and how do we know that the word Yore in itself, you know, implies that it is for blessing? The Siv, as the Pasuk says, of Nate Sion, this is again from Yoel, from that passage, he says, O children of Zion, he says, Gilu Usmochu Barashem Lekechem, rejoice and be happy in the Lord your God, Kino Zandachem is Hamor Lizdoka, because he has given you the Mora, as we said, it means over here the Yore, for salvation, right? Vayored lochem geshem, and God has brought down for you rain, which is more umalkosh, right? The former rain and the latter rain, borishom, in the first month. Now, of course, we already had a reference to that last week, I mean, where we learned why do they apply this particular verse, and they said that it implies then that in the month of Nisan there was rain, and from this we may say, therefore, according to some of the sages, that we should say Talamotor during all of Nisan, although, I mean, we actually stop at Pesach and we don't say any more from that for various reasons. But, you know, because of the fact that this indicates that it happened. But then we have the story, you know, about how after years of famine and everything else, God said unto them, plant on the first day of Nisan, remember? And then, lo and behold, a miracle occurred. And, you know, they began to see grain sprouting from the earth, so that by the time the 15th day, or the 16th day to be more exact, that he is... second day of Pesach came, they were able to bring Chodesh, they were able to have brand new grain, and that was the equivalent of a half year's growth, which happened all in the space of a half a month that year. That was the miracle. Alright, but anyway, as we see then that the More or the Yoreh, this is meant to be a blessing. So if Yoreh is meant to be a blessing, then Malkosh too is meant to be a blessing and not those other horrible things that are mentioned. All right, Tana Rabbanan, again going into the business about Yoreh and Malkosh, says Yoreh b'Malcheshvan. There's a tradition that says that Yoreh is the rain that falls in Cheshvan, right? Or Malkosh b'Nisan, and Malkosh is the rain that falls in the month of Nisan. Ato me Yoreh b'Malcheshvan and Malkosh b'Nisan. You argue that Yoreh Taka is the rain that falls in Cheshvan and Malkosh and Nisan. Or Eino, or maybe it's different. You know, Eli Yoreh b'Tishrei, that the Yoreh is the rain that happens in Tishrei, or Malkosh b'Iyar, and the latter rain is going to happen when?
Yeah,
7 months later, in the month of Iyar, which is, of course, the month after Nisan. So Talmud Lomar, so therefore, the Pasuk says, b'Ito. In its time. Okay? In other words, not that there should be rainfall out of the proper rainy season, because again, we have to bear in mind that we're talking about Eretz Yisrael, right?
We need the rain.
Right, we need the rain. There's no question about that. But the question is, when should the rain come? And it should come be'ito. It should come in the proper time. You know, when the seeds need it, so that the grain could grow and all the food could grow and the trees could bear their fruits in its proper time and so on and so forth. So that being the case, then we would have to say that Malkosh in Iyar is not the proper time. Maybe Nisan would still be a proper time. This is why we're still saying it, you know, in Nisan. But in Iyar, definitely it should not be there, and that's why the bracha is that the rain should be the Ito, its proper time.
Why should not
give
the rain to Iyar? What is the harm?
Okay, the harm would be that by the time of Iyar, things are already growing in the field, okay? And let's say the first harvest has already taken place, because the Omer represents really the first crop that grows. And what is this? It's a barley crop, okay? That grows faster than anything else. It's the first crop. Just as, for example, among the trees, what's the tree that bears fruit first in Eretz Yisrael? No, the answer is it's the almond tree. The shaked, right? And this is why Yirmiyahu uses as an image that God is looking eagerly to carry out, you know, his will, to carry out his word.
We stopped saying Mashivaro the first day of Pesach.
Correct. And at the same time, then we're no longer saying Talamata. This must be decided. Right. But as I said, when we studied a couple of weeks ago, reviewed a little bit last week, there were those who felt that they should still continue to say it all Nisan. Achiyavor Nisan.
But then if we have rain and the pilgrims are going home, they'll get caught in the rain.
Yeah, that's true.
So I guess you have to say then the same reason why they said not to start in the same Marshall. I mean, not the Marshall Rift. That's
stop.
Okay. But when not to start in until Amota
Lidrocha.
That's
right.
You know, until the pilgrims got back from Sukkot. So you could say the same thing applies to the pilgrims who have gone to Pesach. Okay. Good observation. Shkoyach. Okay. Let me get into
it. Right.
All right. Now we have another interpretation of what is Malkush. Okay. Malkush. What does the word Malkush mean? So Amar Rav Nahilai Bar Idi Omar Shmuel. So Rav Nahilai, the son of Idi, said that Shmuel said, Dovar Shemol Kashusehen Shal Yisrael. He says that Malkush is derived from Mal and Kash, or Kasheh, okay? In other words, Mal means that it dissolves, okay? It dissolves the hardness of the people of Israel. In other words, that the rain reminds them that they should do tshuva, and you know, they should not be kasher, they should not be stiff-necked, you know, sheor. They should turn to God. That's why it's called Malka, she says. Okay. Well, that's one interpretation. This is Shmuel's interpretation. Then we have another one. Devei Rabbi Yishmuel, Tana, there was a teacher from the school, a disciple of the school of Rabbi Yishmael, who said, Malkosh means Dovar Shemimale Tavua Bekasha. He says, Malkosh implies that Mimale, it fills with grain Bekasha. Bekasha is the kash, the straw, the stubble. In other words, the chaff that we normally see, it becomes filled with grain, with ears of grain.
Fully grown.
So, right. So, in other words, the rain causes the plant, which otherwise, without the rain, would simply be chaff, would be stubble, would be nothing, to become filled with ears of grain. So that's Malkosh, okay? Mimale and Kosh.
What is Kosh then?
Kosh, Kosh in Hebrew means straw. Straw. But as I say, you know, it's also in reference, you know, to the straw of the field,
yeah.
Reference to the straw of the, you know, the chaff of the grain, right. That grows and so on, so the kash. Yeah. Today, of course, the modern Hebrew, they use it in the sense not just of any kind of a straw, but let's say you need a straw for soda or something, that's also kash.
Kash too.
Right. Or kashit, if you wish, you know, a little swirl or something.
But kasheh is something else.
Yeah, kasheh is hard. Well, that's
hard.
The first interpretation. Shemal kashetehen shal Yisrael. In other words, the God dissolved the stubbornness of the people of Israel, the hardness of the stubbornness. Okay? All right, so now it's in reference to the word kash. Now, the Masnisa, in the Baraisa, Satana, he taught that the word Malkush is Dover Sheyored, it goes down Alham Lilos Velakashim. It's, in other words, it's rain which falls both upon the Melilos, the ears of corn, and also the ears of grain, and also upon the straws. In other words, it enables both of them to become fruitful and yield. Tana Rabbah. Our sages taught that Yoreba Macheshwan, right? Malkush Benisim. They're coming back again to this teaching, and they again want to analyze it. So I say, Ato Omer, you say it means Yoreb Bimar Cheshvan, or in Rel Bechodesh Kislev. Now, before we said, right, that the Yoreb, you know, would be in Mar Cheshvan, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what did we say? And then, you know, the Malkush we put off, you know, Benisim, or. But now he says maybe Yore is not the rain that falls in Cheshvan, but rather maybe it's the rain that falls in Chodesh Kislev. In other words, a month later than the month of Cheshvan. So Talmud Loma, this is the reason, again, why the Pasuk says, Be'ito. Yore Malkosh, Be'ito, right?
In its time.
In other words, it has to be the right time. And the right time is Cheshvan, it's not Kislev. Yore Malkosh. Yeah, Be'ito, Yore Malkosh. So it says, Ma Malkosh, Be'ito. Just as the Malkosh has to come in its proper time, so off Yorubito, so Yorubito has to fall in its proper time. Okay. Now, we could take a look at what's in the parentheses, but the reason why it's in parentheses is because, you know, some of the commentators are convinced that this was added to the text. It's not part of the original text of the Gemara at this point. That's what the note on the side over there says. The Rasha Mashman said, the Mem Zayin over there means that he leaves it out, okay? So he was the one who decided that it didn't really belong over there. But what it says over there is simply, Kevin Sheyotza Nisan Liyodu Geshomim, you know, once the month of Nisan has passed, we've had this before, by the way, so, and rain falls, so Eino Simon Bracha, then it's not a Simon of Bracha. In other words, during Nisan, there still is room to consider that the Malkosh is a blessing. But if it comes after Nisan, then in that case, it's considered that it's no longer a blessing. Tanya Idoch, another interpretation, is Yorub Amacheshwan, right? The Malkosh ben Nisan, the Rabbi Meir. This was Rabbi Meir's opinion. The Chachomim Omrim, but the sages say, Yorub Kislev. So they want to know now, Man Chachomim. So who are the Chachomim who said that Yorub is Kislev and is not Cheshwan? So Rav Chista Rabbi Yossi. So he said, it's the opinion of Rabbi Yossi. The Tanya, Ezehi Revi'a Rishona, what is the very first rain? So the answer is, Habechira, the very first one, literally the firstborn rain, right? In other words, the first rain comes down, and the third, Bishloshiva Machishwan. Benonis, the middle rain, comes down, Bishivabo, on the seventh of the month of Cheshwan. Afela, the late rain, is Beshiva Asabo. It falls on the 17th. Divri Rabbi Meir. This is the opinion of Rabbi Meir. So in other words, according to Rabbi Meir, you find actually that there are three rainy seasons within the month of Cheshwan. Okay? On the 3rd, on the 7th, and on the 17th. Now, if you remember, we had previously, a couple of weeks ago, the fact that when should we start in to say Talamotar?
After the
holidays. Yeah, when do we start Talamotar? So
December.
The opinions given by the sages in Eretz Yisrael was that either on the 3rd or on the 7th. Okay? So we can see how they correspond to the dates that we have over here. So in other words, in accordance with Rabbi Meir's opinion, these are three distinct periods of rain during the month of Cheshvan. Okay? This is what he
says.
Right, Mar Cheshvan, which, as I told you, is the real name of the month.
Right.
Okay? Rabbi Yehuda, naturally you always disagree. Rabbi Yehuda over there, the Shiva, he says the first rain is on the 7th, over Yud Zion, and then on the 17th. I mean, there's no disagreement so far between him and Rabbi Meir, but the disagreement is that Rabbi Meir said on the 3rd, and he says, Ube Eshu Mishloisha. Says on the 23rd of the month. There's also a third period of rain. Rabbi Yossi Omer, the Yud Zion, he says that the rain is on the 17th of the Esrom Bishleisha and of Rosh Chodesh Kislev. So in other words, he says that it's the rain that falls in a later period. The Chenoi Rabbi Yossi Omer, and likewise, Rabbi Yossi said, Ein Hayechidim Misanin Ad Sheyegir Rosh Chodesh Kislev. Now we have to understand what he's saying over here. Later on, we're going to learn why is this Gemara called Tanis? Because what does Tanis mean? It means fasting, right? Okay.
How to fast and to pray for it to get rain.
Correct. That it draws its name specifically from the fact that if there is what we say, Atiras Geshomim, you know, that the rain is withheld by the Rebbeinu Shalom so it doesn't fall, you know, remember what they say, V'yotos HaShemayim, right? This is why I say we call it Atiras Geshomim or Otzer and so on, okay? So if the rain doesn't fall, then they would begin a series of fast days in order to beg God, you know, to send rain upon the earth, okay? So the very first one, according to Rabbi Yosei, it says, Ein ha-yechidim istanen, the yechidim. Yechidim means the individuals. Now, who are the individuals? The answer is, these are individuals who are very pious, very firm, but they're not doing it as part of a seabor. That's why they're called Yochid, Yechidim, okay? In other words, Yechidim in two senses. Sibur would imply that you call a public fast. This is what we call. I mean, whenever we have a Tanis, you know, a public fast is called in Hebrew Tanis Tzibur. Okay? Like, for example, Shiva Subatamis, Tisha B'Av. This is a Tanis Tzibur. Okay? And likewise, if there is, God forbid, you know, some terrible situation that you feel that you have to pray, so you fast and you have special prayers, and that's also, and you can proclaim a Tanis Tzibur. Okay? So, but the first one is only not the community as a whole prayed, but special individuals. And they prayed as Yechidim, as individuals themselves. So as I say, in a double meaning, these are very special people, very from, right? People who have, you know, tremendous zechuyot. They have all kinds of merits to them. And but also they're doing it as Yechidim and as individuals and not as a Tzibur. So when would they start in to pray, you know, fast and pray for rain? The answer is they wouldn't do it prior to Rosh Chodesh Kislev. Okay. And that's the opinion of Rabbi Yosef. Omer Rav Chisda, and Rav Chisda said, Halacha ke Rabbi Yosef. He says the halacha in this particular case, Taka follows Rabbi Yosef. Amemar Master Nahoda Rav Chisda, the Halishna. Amemar taught this, what we have learned, is spoken in the name of Rav Chisda, in the following way. He says, Bishloshe b'macheshvan, on the third day of Macheshvan, Shoalin is Hagishomim. They begin asking for rain. In other words, they begin saying, Talamot. Okay? Rav Gamliel Omer, Bishivabal. Rav Gamliel says they begin saying Kalamotar on the seventh of the month of Mar Cheshvan. Omer Rav Chisda, Rav Chisda said, Halacha ke Rav Gamliel. That's the halacha follows Rav Gamliel. So, now they say the following. Keman azlo hodetanya Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel le'me'al geshamim she'yordu shiva yomim zahazeh atomenu behen revi'a rishaynu ishniu shlishis. So they want to know whose opinion is the following statement given by Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, who could be, of course, the son of Rabbi Gamliel. Okay, the reason why I say it could be because these were all descendants of Hillel, Shimon Gamliel, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Rabbi Gamliel ben Shimon, etc., etc. You know, the fathers and the sons. You know, they carried on the name. So. Presumably this is the son of Rabbi Gamliel, but he taught that Geshomim Sheyordu Shiva Yom Zarachazeh, if rain falls 7 consecutive days, rains the entire week, Atomun Behen, so you can count them this week as being Revi'a Rishono Ushniyo Shlishi.